This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 3rd. I'm John Gibson, and I'm with my partner, Jim Allen, on a Sunday night. And also joining us is Jason Koskrey of the Japan Times. Thanks a lot for being with us tonight, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we like to have you on twice, you know, as much as we really need to have you on. But
that could mean a few things.
But yeah, we're getting an echo, so I hope this echo isn't coming through. I hope it's recording clean. But how you doing, Jason?
Good.
Jim, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, other than being technically, you know, sort of snake bit, I'm good.
Okay, you're technically snake bitten. I'm just snake eaten.
Nice to meet you, snake eaten.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That's my own joke. All right, I hope everybody is masking up and hunkering down, and please do it for the economies. On this week's show, obviously, we've got a special edition of Mini Tracks with Jason Koskrey as the guest. We're going to discuss the imports in both leagues getting into action, funky rule, and I have a rant about replays. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, take two on this. You know, things happen. Bad things happen to me if, when it comes to computers sometimes. But hey, we're back. Oh, we're all together, and that's what's fun. We're sharing time together. That's what's important here. Quality time. Some very high quality late night time. So let's get the mini track segment underway. I obviously like what the Tigers are doing. They won 20 games during the late March and then all of April period that we're discussing here, and just looked like a very complete team. 20 wins were the most in NPB during this period. And the Giants had 16 wins, second most during this period. So I don't think that's very bad. At all. Pretty impressive for the Giants, considering they didn't have all their full complement of foreign players. But what team, Jason, impressed you the most during this period?
That's the Tigers. They seem to be a very complete team at the moment. They are scoring runs, which has been a bugaboo for them the past few years, and they're preventing runs. They're not perfect on defense, but they're not getting in their own way as much as they used to. So it's got to be the Tigers for me, really. Jerry Sands has been playing really well. Teruaki Sato, Jeffrey Marte, they've got a good rookie shortstop whose name I can't remember. Kento Itahara is doing really well. So I think to start the season, the Tigers, you really couldn't ask for a whole lot more with the way they've started.
Jim?
Well, I'm perfectly in agreement with that. It's a Takuma Nakano, by the way, and he looks fine. He looks good. He's made some outstanding plays on defense. The question, of course, will be, you know, whether he can be, I guess, reliable, which is always the hard with the Tigers, because this is a team that likes to focus on negatives.
It likes to, or it just DNA-wise, it just has to.
No, it's sort of like with the Tigers, there's a constant search for scapegoats when things go wrong. So I think what'll happen is when they actually have a good team, sometimes they kind of get in their own way. Mm-hmm. They start looking for reasons why they're not better. And right. They'll start sort of demonizing their players. So, you know, that's a problem. When things are good, they're really good. And this year, they're really good. So my reservations about the Tigers in general probably don't apply this year, because I think this is going to be one of those years where they're just really good.
Okay. Now, you say demonize their players, but that's not such a team thing as it is an entire outside the organization that manifests itself by having the Tigers eat their young.
Yeah, but that's what they do. I mean, and they pick up cues. They have a sort of a dynamic with the local media that they have to sort of respond. It's sort of a, what do you say, a stimulus response, kind of Pavlov's dog. When the media mm-hmm. complains, they have to find somebody to feed it.
Right. Well, I tell you, it hasn't had, I mean, the Giants have been, talk about feeding, the Giants have been eating just about everything they see. And I really like what they've done with a lot of the young players. And it seems like Tatsunori Hata, the manager, whatever young players he used early on this season, they all produced in some way, somehow, maybe not on the mound as much, but some of the young position players. And they've been really good considering they didn't have Justin Smoke and Eric Thames early on in the season. And also we realized we lost Eric Thames after just two plate appearances. He tore his Achilles this past week and he's done for the season. And at 34, he said he vowed to be back playing baseball. So we wish him the best for sure. That's a tough injury at 34 to experience.
Well, I'll chip in with the Giants. The offense is fine. Zelis Wheeler's been tremendous. Okamoto got off to a really bad start. And sort of like he's been a little inconsistent this year. I wonder how long the Giants are going to go before they say, man, we need Warren Cromartie to come back and coach Okamoto or something. He's probably, he might be just hanging by the phone every day for that to happen. The other players have all been pretty good. Takumi Oshiro, the catcher, has been the regular catcher. He's been pretty good. But Okamoto's been a bit of an issue. But it's sort of like, I think what John said, everybody they put out there has played well. I did like, they got some extremely high-level performance from their starting pitchers. But, you know, what I mentioned about the Tiger, you mentioned the Tigers eating their young. You know, I'll have to go back to what we said last week about the Giants pitching. You know, this is a team that last year in the Japan Series decided it didn't have any.
The Giants, yes.
Yeah. So they were going to do, you know, the Japan Series plan was two starters and three bullpen days.
Right, right.
So I think they have a little thing where nobody's quite, they hold their starters to perhaps unreasonable expectations.
Mm.
So, and then having good weeks meant, well, when hitters adjust to them, when teams adjust to their success, and they don't do as well, well, let's send them to the farm team. Because obviously they're not as good as we thought they were. They're not living up to expectations, and that's big.
We got a chance when all those guys went down with COVID, they had a chance to bring up some people to get some run, which is probably going to help them out a lot in the long run. Like Seiya Matsubara was doing really well and defensively, and he's been hitting pretty mm-hmm. decently. He's like Tetsuya Matsumoto, the remix. Yuki Takahashi, five mm-hmm. starts, five wins, 1.80 ERA. You know, he's been doing really, really pretty good for them. Well, just a matter of, you know, can those guys keep pitching the way they're pitching? And you know, one thing that, you know, Wayne Grzelcyk used to say is that, you know, it's hard for some of the Giants players to always be playing, looking over their shoulders, knowing that as soon as they, you know, make one mistake, Hart's sending them down and, you know, looking for the next big thing. So you know, they're always going to be playing with that pressure with the Giants, other than like Sakamoto. And he's probably the only one who can withstand that because he's not going anywhere. Although Hiraoka's there now, but still. He's on the farm, so Sakamoto is probably the only guy with a safe spot. Although Zelis Wheeler has just been playing his tail off lately. So,
yeah, but I think it is still, when you think about it, it's quite remarkable they did so well with Okamoto being pretty quiet and Yoshihiro Maro being hurt. Well, he was deactivated with coronavirus, as was Zelis Wheeler. So, you know, all those guys being gone and they're still hanging in there. I mean, they've looked mortal. They've had a lot of games where they just got beat up by mediocre teams.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really the world beaters that maybe we anticipated compared to the rest of the league. I think we just kind of lost confidence in the rest of the league after the last 2 years.
There's something that Maru is still, you know, Maru came back, but he's still not exactly right. And I don't know if they're even going to play him. They took him out of the game yesterday. And, you know, they asked when Motoki came to talk to everybody, Daisuke Motoki, the head coach, they said, you know, why'd you take Maru out? He said, oh, we didn't take him out. You know, we were just giving him a rest, which is just an obvious lie. But
Yeah. Nobody tells obvious lies in Japan. They're all transparent.
Well, you guys talked about pitching, and I think in the first version of this, we talked about the fact that the Hanshin Tigers are going to get Mel Rojas Jr. coming soon, and that presents a problem for them in terms of who they take out of the lineup to insert him in there. And, you know, we did see super rookie Teruaki Sato today get the start at third base, and that might be telling, although I certainly doubt it, because I just don't see him playing third base for an extended period. I see him maybe at first base more than I see him at third. Also, Chen Weiying is back, the pitcher, the lefty, the former Dragons pitcher I used to call the Tin Man, and he won his first start for the Tigers this past week in Nagoya at the Dome where he used to pitch. So good for him. And he looked fairly sharp. So I think their pitching can get better. It's just that this team, the only thing that I mentioned in the Central League prediction special was that this team seems to fall apart in the second halves of seasons. And the road trip of death is part of that, possibly. But, you know, sometimes when you have young players, they tend to tire. It gets hot in the summer. I don't know what it is, but I still don't trust them, but they really look like a complete team at the moment and look like they're going to give the Giants quite a run for their money for the title.
Well, they'll figure out how to pitch to Sato too. He'll have to make some more adjustments. Even today, Nomura, he shouldn't have threw him that. Well, easy for me to say sitting here not doing it in the moment, but he shouldn't have threw him that last changeup because he was waiting for it and he went down and got it.
Yeah, that's always the bad one, is to throw the one the guy's waiting for. but you know, the Hero interview was funny because he said, Jerry Sands told me to look for something that drops and then try to go up the middle or the other way. And well, he went the other way, he went the other way, as in like the upper end of the right field bleachers.
opposite way from where the pitch was thrown.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the teams that haven't performed so well, and maybe your most surprising teams that haven't been performing that well. And I think I talked about the fact that the Dragons were just really frustrating for fans. I described watching their offense as watching molasses try to flow uphill, and at times this season, I was thinking, well, the molasses has a much better chance of succeeding. But what have you guys seen as the teams that have really been shockingly bad for you guys? Jason, you're the guest, so please start.
I don't necessarily think the Dragons have been shockingly bad myself. I looked up some of
The offense has.
The offense has. Because
the team has not been. Yeah, you're right.
Over the last 2 weeks, they've got the best team ERA in PD, and they might be up there for the whole season. So they pitch really pretty well. They can't score runs. Although they put a bunch up on the Giants on Saturday, then almost gave them all back. But I guess the team that's most surprisingly bad for me is Yokohama. I didn't think they'd be particularly great, but I didn't think they'd be this bad. Their pitching is really just shot right now, which is not good in the Central League and not good in that park. And because if you're not particularly good pitching team, you're going to really get exposed in this league. It's just ask the Yakult Swallows. They're not pitching well this year either. They're just hitting better. But you look at the Bay Stars, they're getting Tyler Austin's coming back. Neftali Soto's back. Shugo Maki's already been playing well. There's also Masayuki Kuwahara's doing all right. So, Keita Sano, who Alex Ramirez found, they're doing
it. Here, I just found this over here. I'm going to put it in the number four hole. Have some of this.
He's still hitting well. It's just they don't have Shota Imanaga. Kenta Taira is not around. And their pitching is so bad and their bullpen is bad. Although Yasuaki Yamasaki's coming on late. He's got a string of maybe 10 or 11 straight appearances without giving up any runs. So maybe they're going to get better, but I think their pitch is going to keep holding them back. And I do kind of think that's why they've been so surprisingly bad for me.
Okay. Jim?
The Bay Stars. The Bay Stars sort of remind me of the 2005 Rocktown Eagles because they're a team.
That bad, huh?
Well, no, I don't mean it as in terms of quality. I think they're a better team than that, but the Eagles were a better team than that. What I mean is that they're trying too hard. you know, they're trying to, you know, I don't know, they're exasperated and clutching at straws and trying to do things they shouldn't be doing. And the result is some really ugly plays. And, you know, just and getting maybe getting down on themselves and maybe losing confidence in
yeah,
their innate ability to, you know, to play baseball.
I do see that confidence waning because I do see some of the pitchers, not this past weekend, because they did a lot better in winning the series against the Yakult Swallows, but they had this, there's an air of failure out there that just seems like it's looming over their games.
Yeah.
Whether it's somebody who's going to make a poor defensive play or somebody's going to put a pitch where they shouldn't at the worst time, or they look like they're going to do something on the bases and then they end up making an out or something. It just, something's going wrong. And then, or they just have a bad inning. An inning blows up and they make an error, or like the Swallows do sometimes, they just make an error at an inopportune time and the floodgates open. But I do see that. I do see.
It was apparent the other day when there was a play at the plate, and Shuto Takajo, the catcher, turned his back on the infield, and I think it was Kento Itohara or Koji Chikamoto who just took third base when the catcher had his back turned to him. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things, you know, really unbalanced and sort of out of control right now. They're not really playing with the confidence that, oh, you know, if we just do our jobs, we can win these games.
Right.
So I see that as the biggest problem. I don't, you know, they're probably closer to a 400 team than a 300 team, but you know, they're not a 200 team.
Yeah. And the Nippon Ham Fighters have been another bad team, and no surprise that the team is struggling to me, because I think we all in the PL prediction show or special, we said we didn't expect them to do well. But I think what has been surprising for me is the rolling roster that there have been guys. They've had a, you know, I used to call players an elevator player, who a guy who would come up and then go back down and then come up and go back down. But they just have an elevator roster, it seems. Everybody, you know, not named Sho Nakata and some of the other starters. And guys come up, they come down, they shuffle throughout the lineup. It's and then they got hit with COVID this past weekend. A total of 7 players either had close contact or for whatever reason had to be taken off the roster. And I think in the first tape recording of this, we talked about Chusei Manami being one of those players who didn't really even have time to get out of town before they called him back. because he was going to get sent down, but he came back. So the level of failure for that team in terms of not winning has been a kind of a shock to me. But
you mentioned shuffling them up and down. Nakata was hitting 7th the other day.
Yes, yeah, and hitting 2nd as well. So I mean,
I know the hobgoblin of the pro yakking is set. It's like, what do you think about Nakata batting 2nd? It just doesn't seem right to you, does it, bud? No, I don't know about you guys, but boy, there's something, you know, something stinks up there if they've got Nakata batting 2nd.
Oh, well, the show I saw, one of the guys, I think it was Dave Okubo, and he was saying, well, maybe he's just trying to teach him something. This is what the other players who are hitting in front of you go through, and this is the experience that they have. And I'm like, no, it isn't, because they're not asking him to do the same things that they would ask those other guys to do. So that's not true at all. But he does know what it's like to get that, to be guaranteed those at bats in a game. Although we haven't had a perfect game in Japan for a long time. So batting in the number 4 hole, he's going to get his 4 at bats. Batting in the 7th hole, maybe not.
What was he hitting? 208 something? I don't have it in front of me.
I don't have it in front of me either.
I hit it well. So
he got 4 I don't like to look down that much.
Wow, hurt your neck doing that.
And Haruki Nishikawa isn't doing so well either. It's really Kensuke Kondo, when they brought him to Tokyo, he drank something, took something, whatever. He started hitting home runs, but the rest of them, and Ryo Watanabe is actually playing pretty well. He just doesn't have any power.
Yeah. Well, he's playing like he can. And of course they lost Yuki Nomura for a while, and he was red hot at the start of the season, and he was smoking all in the spring training. And So things like that. And now they're without Takuya Nakashima and Nishikawa and Yoshishimizu the catcher. And you know, the list kind of goes on and on and on. And it's like the fighters are like, what bad can happen next?
Right. And they had their game on Sunday canceled. And then I got a press release from NPB tonight saying that the games from Monday to Wednesday would be called off or postponed. And in the first version of this, Jason chimed in with another note that said, what did it say? I don't quite remember what you said.
Well, they said that they're going to do like retest everybody or do more testing. And if they have problems emerge from that, then the games after this Chiba series could also get called off.
Yeah. Right. So things are not looking well. Hopefully things will come to that.
Well, just a word, you know, I guess a reference point is that in the J-League, Gamba Osaka had to scratch its first game in March and they didn't play again until April. So they could potentially miss 3 weeks.
Yikes. All right, let's let Jason go on this note. I just wanted to get your top players, your top performers for you personally. For me, Hisanori Yasuda of the Lotte Marines leading MPB and RBIs was kind of a shock. And then when I did look up the number, I saw that two more teammates were right behind him. So there's three Marines players leading the Pacific League in RBI. So that was a big surprise. Yosuke Kikuchi of the Carp hitting like a right-handed Ichiro Suzuki and leading the Central League in batting. That's pretty impressive. And I really like what Sabre rookie Gakuto Wakabayashi is doing, leading that league in stolen bases. So, and I always say, what's the most important aspect of base stealing? It's getting on base, and that kid is getting on base. So that's impressive. So Jason, what about you?
Zelis Wheeler, the Giants, is batting 519. Although he hasn't played that many games because he was out for COVID, but he's been made some defensive plays in the field. He's been hitting well. Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Oryx Buffaloes is leading the league in ERA. I think he's pitched the most innings too. Kono Takahashi of the Cebu Lions, 4-0, 2.83 ERA. He's been pitching really well, and he pitches really well against the Hawks recently for some reason. Yuki Takahashi with the Giants, another pitcher, Joe Gonko. Yurisbel Gracia, I think I said it already, but he's second in batting in the Pacific League. He was first, and then Asamura passed him up. So some of those guys, Shigo Maki, Munetaka Murakami, although I think he's really been playing really well.
He's
been the constant for Yakult.
Certainly. Okay, Jim?
I'm going to go with, I guess, more of a surprise than you know, perhaps the best player in the league is Wu Nenting of the Cebu Lions. He's just what a ball player he's become, and I'm really pleased with that. As far as guys who've really surprised me, I guess I'll have to go back to Tetsuto Yamada being healthy is always a surprise, and if he's healthy and batting. Otherwise, oh gee, who would I pick? I mean, I love the work that Shogo Nakamura has done with the Marines as well. Murakami has been fabulous. I think the Bay Stars, I think, of course, Shugo Maki being really their big player. Teruaki Sato and has been good. I mean, he's not hitting for – basically his game is double, single – strikeout, single, home run, strikeout, walk, double, home run.
Hey, I'll take it. If you keep throwing those home runs in there regularly, I'll take it, you know.
Right. So Jerry Sands has taken a step forward from where he was last year. Doji Kuribayashi of the Carp, has been tremendous. So many good rookies this year. Hiromi Ito of the Fighters has been really, really good.
Mr. Quality Start,
Mr. Quality Start, but I don't get no run support.
Okay. Nope. He's going to sue for lack of support. Yep. All right. Well, this has been really fun, Jason. And doing it twice is always a special thing. So we appreciate you staying up.
You're extra so special.
Late. Yeah, extra late. And so I owe you two dinners now. after COVID, or I'll just send over some pizza or something. Who knows? The COVID might not end for another few years. Just have to mail you a pizza. But we thank you for coming on, and we will try to get you on again. I know you said you can't come on each month, but I'll keep bugging you.
All right.
I like that laugh. Like, that evil laugh. That's all you're going to do? Send me an email? I can ignore that.
Send me a text. I'll ignore that too.
Okay, but thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
See you, man.
All right. See you later. Bye.
All right. Now, making a two-seam transition, let's make it. We got to see a lot of the import players finally all get together. And I want to say all, but it's not quite all of the players who were signed in the offseason or who are on rosters at the end of last season. But most of the guys are back now in either on the top team somewhere or on the farm team somewhere, and they're playing and they're getting in the shape. And it has been nice to see these guys. And as I mentioned earlier, Eric Thames only really got to see a couple of at-bats and some time in the field, and then Torrey's Achilles. And like I said before, we really wish him the best. Justin Smoke with the Giants, his teammate, is going to have to take up some of that slack. And we talked about the fact that Zealous Wheeler's playing so well, but it's just nice to see. It's nice to see the Dragons get Mike Gerber, with whom we talked at the beginning of the year before he came over to Japan. And I remember he was on his way to hitting some batting cages, and he has gotten some nice compliments from some of the players and some of the former players. But they're, just like Eric Thames, we have seen a couple of guys get injured as well. And one of those included Ruzny Castillo of Rakuten, who hurt his side, I think, in his second game on April 23rd. He's really credited with one game played and then was out after a swing in a plate appearance, the first plate appearance on that day. So he had gone over four the day before. So that's one of the things I was concerned about. And I actually was exchanging messages with Zach Neal of the Sabre Lions. And that was one of the things he mentioned, is that he hopes that teams didn't rush the players onto the field and was worried about injuries. And so that's, you know, I think Mike Gerber only played four games down on the farm for the Dragons. And they said, you know what, let's not waste these hits down here on the farm. If he's going to be making any contact at all, we really could use it on the top team. We won't play him every at bat. We'll get him off his feet after maybe three at bats or so, but we've got to get some offense. Let's get him out there. And so they did that. And other than that, who did you see out there? Anybody impress you?
Oh, sure. First of all, I want to mention that not only is Eric Thames the guy who's not going to be here, but it looks very much like Brandon Dixon, number one, the Oryx Buffaloes closer, is not going to play this year.
Oh, okay.
Because his, well, at least that was the, that's what, you know, one never knows whether that's the truth or that's a story.
But that's true.
A source within the Buffaloes said basically he had intended to come to Japan with his family this year. After being away from his family all of last season, he was going to have his family with him this year, and apparently that was the plan, and he's sticking to it.
Okay. So, I've heard a lot about those situations, yes.
Right. So if that is true, then that may be it for Brandon Dixon, number one.
The pitcher.
Yes. Now, Brandon Dixon, number two, the outfielder and first baseman, is getting rave reviews. I mean, he's like the guy. It's like you meet him the first time and you want to introduce him to your daughter and have babies or something. I'm talking about us, but I'm talking about the way the Japanese establishment has treated this guy.
I know.
Slid head first into third base, and they're all pretty much waiting to adopt them and say how much he understands Japanese culture.
Yeah.
So,
I saw your post. I saw that game. I saw his at-bats. I saw the Charlie hustle. And that's really good. And I actually like his approach. And
sure.
And I like the way he looks out there on the field and the swing and all that stuff.
Oh,
but,
man.
You know, let's give it a rest. It's a couple games here, guys.
No, but
settle down.
It is. I know. It's all about hype. But, no, he's been good. And Jose Osuna with the Yakult Swallows has been quite good.
I think, yeah, he has been quite good, but I think Domingo Santana has also been good. He just hasn't had the batting average to go with it, but he has gotten some big hits and made some really good contact. So I like both of those pickups or those additions for
so
the
Swallows.
So far,
I haven't seen as much of Santana because he was, you know, I saw the games when he wasn't hitting. So, you know, those guys have been good. Mike Gerber, the aforementioned Mike Gerber, made really good contact the other day. Corey Spangenberg is back, and he was, you know, hitting shots all over the place.
Yep.
So, no, it has been interesting. Some guys I really haven't seen yet, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Kevin Cron seems to have gotten his groove back on the farm after he recovered from the dreaded lower body lack of fitness.
Hashtag.
Hi.
Dreaded indeed.
Those guys, and oh, I guess that I got to be, Nick Martinez got, you know, he had an interesting story on Saturday, which was he pitched his first game for the SoftBank Hawks. And it's like the teammates wanted to make him welcome. So they scored 9 runs for him.
Yeah.
Which is something he'd never experienced in Japan before, which is, you know, which is not surprising. A lot of guys, you know, don't get 9 runs very often, but yeah, he did that and he pitched well. And he had an interesting comment, which was catcher Takuya Kai, you know, always seemed to have a good sense of what I was doing. Of my approach. And he had some, you know, tips in how we could work together. And I was eager to learn from him. And so that was kind of interesting.
I saw that Hero interview where he said, he hit me well as a catcher when I was trying to get him out. So we talked about, you know, the things that I could do to work to find a good pitching plan against the opponent. I thought that was a really clever way of putting it. This guy ate me up. So he basically knows how to help me, you know, walk me through pitching against guys who are going to be looking to attack my weaknesses. So I thought it was really good, a good way of saying that. So I liked it. It has been nice to see some of the import players or most of the import players get in, get their feet wet. I think they're going to be playing catch up, obviously, for a while here as they go through essentially their spring training game season and they try to work themselves into shape. And so I think it's a good idea not to overwork them. Although I think Nick Martinez threw 6 innings, was it?
5 points, I think.
On Saturday.
Oh,
so
maybe 6, yeah. Okay.
What's yeah, I'll look it up as we talk here. But so I thought, you know, I thought there were – because – he pitched so well and he didn't allow a run. I thought, well, you know, they're just going to see again, instead of see how far a guy can hit the ball, they're just going to see how far he can go and until he gives up a run. Yeah. But he threw 6 innings and 5 hits, struck out 4 with 1 walk. So 98 pitches. So he had a good outing. So I was glad to see him. It's just good to see the foreign guys get out there for me and get into the groove here. So hopefully just like, Zach Neale was talking about the fact that we won't see a lot of injuries or more injuries. We already had a catastrophic one. We had a who knows how long Castillo for the Rakuten Eagles is going to be out. But hopefully we don't see too much more of that stuff and we can see the guys work themselves into shape and then really have a nice second half to the season or a good 2/3 of the season when they finally get themselves into shape. That'd be nice. All right, making a seamless transition. It's our Saturday Masahiro Tanaka as the pitch turn segment. So he pitched on Saturday, was really strong. 6 scoreless innings, 5 hits, 4 strikeouts, a walk. He hit another batter on the shoelaces.
Except it was a front foot slider this time.
Yeah, but he had 6 strikeouts and he has 1-2 consecutive decisions now, so he's starting a new streak after losing that first one, the first game coming back to Japan. But he looked to me like he, and this was probably his best statistically, this might have been his best start, but obviously he didn't allow any runs, but he still looks to me like he's searching for the combination. And it looked to me as if he thought, okay, I know some of these guys. The other guys are kind of new. you know, I've been gone for a while. I've been gone 7 years, you know. Some of the guys, even if I knew what they used to be, they've changed. They've morphed into different kinds of players. They've had to get better. Mm-hmm. So I have to adjust to what I'm seeing and what I'm doing. So it still seemed to me like he's searching, and he just, you know, he's different from the guy we had previously seen, who was really confident, really dominant. Seemed like he never hesitated. He always knew what he wanted to throw. He had a plan, and he just went out and tried to execute it. And now it seems that he seems to be thinking more to me between pitches.
No, yes? Maybe could be. Yeah. I think that's always his MO, at least with the Yankees, when I probably watched him more than I did when he was in Japan. No, he's always plotting and working on his combinations. And the interesting thing to me, it's so funny because the coach and the manager were both saying, no, his pitches were better. And I'm a little perplexed by that. His location was probably the worst of the three games.
This third game.
Yeah.
He
was the worst. The fastball location was better than it was in the first game when it was absolutely horrible. But the other pitches, everything was kind of off. I mean, so many splitters were, you know, above the belt. So many sliders were up in the middle of the zone. Although, to be fair, they were having trouble hitting those. I think the sliders were fairly crisp. I thought his fastball did have a lot of zip on it, I guess. But I've been really interested to see how teams have adjusted to him. You know, they're paying rapt attention. The first game, the Fighters were like saying, you know, they were sitting on fastballs, and when he missed, they clobbered him. And then he stopped throwing fastballs, but they were still looking for pitches that weren't coming. So that was the Fighters game, but he gave up 3 runs on the home runs, and that was that. And then the Lions game, it's like they saw, oh yeah, the slider's really good. That's the pitch we ought to go after. And so when he missed sliders against the Lions, they were slamming those. They were basically waiting for him to throw his slider in the zone. And that worked until he switched to the fastball, and then that was lights out. So this game, he came out, and Kazuhisa Ishii, the manager, said, well, he did have trouble negotiating to what they were trying to do at the plate and start. I don't really know what that meant. And he said his pitches were good, but all I could take away was that the Marines were essentially... Their focus seemed to be on not chasing.
Right.
Okay, which is good because Tanaka, like Tomoyuki Sugano, will basically set you up to chase. And he's good at it. I mean, they haven't been seeing his pitches, and the sliders are really, really hard, and this hard to stay keep up with, and the splitter as well. But so that was going on, but they missed. They laid off so many good pitches, and they missed a couple of real bad pitches. And the one in the, I believe it was the fifth inning, and he had 2 runners on, and he threw a really straight fastball. And it might have been Yasuda. And when he threw the ball, he looked disgusted with himself, and he saw, you know, oh man, I've lost it. But you know, he hit a kind of medium strong routine grounder to shortstop. Actually, shortstop Hiroto Kobukata did a pretty good job of making a play because the runner was going past him. The third baseman was trying to cut in front of him, and he sort of through the traffic, picked up the ball and threw to first. So it was really good. But Tanaka walked off the mound talking to himself. He's going like, what just happened? So he was making those mistakes, and the Marines were missing a lot of them. And I don't know why, maybe, but you know, I guess my summary is this. He's got so many good pitches that you have to respect them. And I got the feeling the Marines probably gave him a little too much respect on Saturday, because they were, you know, they were looking for pitches, or they were looking for certain things, and he was missing, and they were not doing the most with the only guy, and I'll give him credit for this, was Takashi Ogino, the leadoff hitter. Because he threw fat pitches to him, and those balls got lined into the outfield.
Yeah, yeah. He had at least two hits. I don't remember if he had three.
He did, but he hit the mistakes. Everybody else pretty much was up there, like with a plan that wasn't working.
Yeah, I'm looking at the stats, and like you said, he probably didn't pitch that well this time, but he had the best, you know, results wise, statistically, he had really good numbers. You know, he didn't give up that many hits. He only walked one. He struck out six. So I think that might have been why he had that face of lack of confidence. He just didn't look like the guy. And this is, I think he had that look in the first start as well, when he gave up the home run to Shohei Nakata early on. He knew he missed, and that he knew he missed his location. And then he gave up the home run to, was it Ishii? I think it was Kazunari Ishii in the second inning. And again, he was kind of disgusted with himself, but then he settled down. And by the time he left that game, he looked a little bit more confident. But yeah, on Saturday, this time out, he just looked perplexed. And like I said, I think he's still adjusting. I like it. I think he's going to have to work. I think the teams probably compared the old film to the Yankees film to whatever tendencies that he might have had in the past. And people have done their homework. So he's got to work the cutout for him. And we're talking about this, and the guy still has a 2.12 ERA, a whip of 0.82, and he struck out 15 in 17 innings. So, I mean, what are we complaining about? I mean,
well, we're not complaining. And that's the thing.
Good. Good, because I didn't want to complain.
No, we're evaluating. And I think it's terrific, because it shows a lot of things. He's going to be working his butt off to get where he thinks he ought to be, because that's just him. And the other teams, nobody wants to get eaten alive by this guy. Everybody wants to show him that they can play ball. The level of attention by the fighters and let's put it this way. What I notice sometimes about Japanese teams is they go into games with plans. And if the plans work, you know, our guys will go up with individual plans. You know, the light hitter will be looking for a fat, you know, for, you know, a go up against a curveball. If he throws me one up, hangs one up in the zone, I'm going to hit it out of the park. But, you know, it's a real, you know, luck of the draw kind of thing. But when you see a team with a team plan, those team plans tend to dissolve. They tend to last a couple of innings and they're gone, because the other team makes adjustments to them. And against Tanaka, he's going to adjust to them faster than the team adjusts to him. So, right. But they're trying really hard, and I love it. They're trying really hard, so his games are going to be really entertaining, and he's going to try really hard. He's just going to be, in my opinion, he's just going to be raising the level of every game he plays in.
I agree. And I'm going to be watching. Yeah. I think that first game back was must see TV nationwide, and he lost it. And I think he lost some of the spectator, you know, allure that brings the viewers to the game, because they wanted to see that streak keep going, and the streak stopped. And so it just seemed like, before that first game, there was a lot of expectation for the game and a lot of anticipation and a lot of electricity. And then since then, there just really hasn't been as much. But not for me. I'm right there with
it.
Yeah,
me too.
I'm all in.
I mean, I just love the questions. The hero interview, the first question was, you won your 100th game in Japan last week. How did you approach your 101st? like I always do.
Yeah, like I approach every game, bro. Yeah. How did you approach your bad question?
Hashtag high heat.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good. He doesn't quite do the deadpan Takeya Nakamura like, you're kidding me, right? Like, it's not like a real question. he tries to help him out a little bit. He told a joke when she asked what was the reason behind his clutch pitching. he said, because I won. But he had a thought. The reason, because I won. I pitched well.
Yeah, I did see that interview. Yeah, again, he's really nice. That's a bad question. Yeah. So, all right, let's move along. Let's make a four-seam transition because this is completely different. I have a rant, and I'm sure I've made this rant before, but it was really, I wouldn't say frustrating. It's just frustrating as a baseball fan to watch things on replay and not have it ruled correctly or let a bad call stand because, quote unquote, there's not enough video proof. But this was a game on Tuesday night, Oryx Rakuten. It was at Kyocera Dome and eventually ended as a 5-5 draw. And it was an egregious error to me by the umpire because he made a call on something he couldn't see. And it cost the Buffaloes in that they were trying to get out of a bases loaded situation. And they ended up allowing some runs, and that kept the game, or that eventually helped the game be tied, and then they ended up walking away with a tie. So the bases were loaded, there were no outs, and a grounder went to third baseman Tatsuya Yamahashi, and he stepped on third, and he throws home, and they get the catcher, they get the runner in a rundown, and they double him off. It's a double play. But no, the umpire who was standing in the foul ground on third base behind Yamahashi and couldn't see whether his foot was actually on the bag or not, made the call that his foot didn't hit the bag and that there was no force out on that play. So they only ended up getting one out on the play by catching the runner off of, between home and third. And my only gripe was that in the replays, you could clearly see that the angles of Yamashi's foot at third base where he was claiming, and which he did clearly in the video, you could see it, that he stepped on third. It's impossible for a human to do what he did physically, and there's no, you don't have any support under your plant leg if you're stepping on a bag and then pushing off to throw the ball with that back leg. And I just thought it was ridiculous that they didn't overrule the call. But I was really mad at the umpire because if you're standing behind the bag, you can't really see if somebody's got their foot on making contact on the front of the bag or not. And if you don't see it, you can't call that. And it was the most interesting thing was Yamahashi looked at him and said, "What are you talking about? I stepped on the bag." And the umpire did the typical, Japanese older man kind of waving of the hand from side to side in front of his face. It's just to say, no, you didn't touch the bag. And I thought, well, you couldn't possibly see that from where you were standing. You're standing directly behind the bag. If you were standing on the side, I would understand. But he made a bad call and it wasn't overturned. And it was really something that it hasn't been the first one. There have been some other plays this season already. And my point is, I don't think the game was created, especially baseball, to be slowed down to a thousandth of an inch frame to frame thing to see whether a guy stepped on a bag or not. But if you're going to do it, then check and see if the guy stepped on the bag. And if all the laws of physics tell you that he stepped on the bag, I don't think you need conclusive video proof to know that that guy's stepping on the bag and that umpire couldn't possibly see what he is calling. So just overturn it. I don't even know how you could go about not overturning it. So I was really mad as a baseball fan watching that. And you said before that they don't have all the stadiums don't have the same number of cameras at the same locations and all the stadiums are different and all that stuff. But I think there were several angles that I saw on the TV replays that showed that Yamashita was on the bag. So, yeah.
Part of the problem is that on TV, you see a better replay than the umpires do.
That's possible, but...
No, what I mean is that monitors in the stadium... I've told you that, are provided by the owners, and the owners want the cheapest monitors possible because an extra 6,000 yen or $600 or whatever is, you know, they fulfill their obligation if the thing is, you know, like a 1985 Game Boy.
Yeah, well, we got to get rid of these five and dime review monitors and get some better ones because
I saw the play, and to me, actually, I saw it differently because I wasn't listening to the commentary on it, but I saw
that I wasn't either. Yeah.
Was on the side of the bag, but it did look like he made contact with it. But yeah. Okay.
Did you say it didn't look like he made contact with the bag?
No, it did look like his foot was
at an angle, right?
Was right up against the bag.
Was at an angle that.
Oh, because, I didn't see the angle. Okay.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, his foot was in the air at like almost a 90, 80 degree angle because he couldn't put his foot flat because there was a bag underneath it. Okay. There was a base underneath it. His foot couldn't be flat.
Okay, I didn't see that.
Okay.
So they make bad calls and agreed. But it is unfortunately, it's one of the things about Japanese baseball I don't expect to change. Like, you know, guys moaning and complaining about whether a guy has the chops to bat, you know, is smart enough to bat number two or not. You know, yes, nothing we're going to do is going to change it. This is the part of, you know, this is part of the game.
Well, yeah, I'm just suggesting.
Yeah, you're just suggesting that they should fix something that's easy to fix. But geez, well, if we fixed everything that's easy to fix, well, what would be left for us to do?
Yeah, we wouldn't have jobs. They took our jobs. But anyway, yeah.
Indeed.
All right, let's move along. A seamless transition into the unruly double trouble play that I saw the other night. Now, I wasn't aware of this rule, and I was complaining to Jim, but I saw it on Wednesday. This happened at MetLife Dome, the Marines and the Lions, and starter Tatsuya Imai for the Lions induced a ground ball. Was looking to get one of those 3-6-1 double plays, so he went over to first to cover, and it was supposed to be a double play, and he had his cap tucked firmly in his right hand as he was about to take the throw for the double play and missed the ball, and the ball conked him pretty good on his jaw, and he got an error for his efforts. Now, I did not know this, so I was kind of surprised, but the more I thought about it, the more I think it's unfair, and this is why. You explained to me if a player is in position to receive a perfectly good throw on a double play ball, even though the rule that I heard so many years ago, you can't assume a double play, so you can't give a guy an error if he doesn't make a play on a double play, is just a basic guideline, but that the scorer has the right to charge an error if he thinks that a player didn't have to make extreme or extra effort to make the play that he should have made on the double play ball, he can score it as an error. So I understand that now. However, that rule never seems to be applied when it's a bad throw from another infielder somewhere.
It's never applied. It's only applied. No, the rule because on a bad throw, there's no assist. Baseball rules are funky because
that is funky.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like giving the first base. Well, baseball, you have to have a reason for everything. Every base
has to be accounted for. I understand.
Right. Right. So what happens is they've decided that in the baseball rules decided that a throw that is a catchable throw that is in time to get the runner gets an assist, even though no out is made. So because there's an assist on the play, there's also a double play. Okay, it doesn't work with wild throws. It only works with catchable throws that aren't made, aren't caught.
So yeah, well,
that's the rule. So that's why, you know, if you look at the score sheets in Japan, a ball that is, you know, if the second baseman throws the ball to the pitcher at covering at first base and the pitcher doesn't catch an easy ball, it'll go down as a ground out to second base.
If it was a double play ball.
No, if any ball. No, if it's a routine ground out to second base. And
oh, I see. You're saying that it goes down as an error for the person who dropped the ball, but it goes out as an assist for
correct.
The thrower.
And so it'll be recorded as a ground out for everybody except the person making the error. Throws don't count. Only balls not caught count. So in this case, Imai failed to complete the double play, but the double play existed in the records because they had to give credit to the shortstop and the first baseman for their efforts to get two outs. So
right. So let me explain what happened. So this is what I was shocked, and they said this is, you know, one of these rare records. It has only happened 6 times in NPB. But the Marines went on to hit into another double play that inning. And so they ended up hitting into 2 double plays in 1 inning, accounting for 4 of the 3 official outs.
Yeah, it's analogous to the 4 strikeouts in an inning.
I would say it's even more rare than that.
No, it is. It has only
happened 6 times, and this was the first time in 10 years. And the other time it happened, or the last time it happened, involved Chunichi and Hiroshima in July of 2011. So where was I?
We were at Starbucks that day.
So
we were at Starbucks across the street in Higashi.
I don't know why I'd never heard of this.
What I meant, it's analogous in that you have potentially four outs, but there's only 3 outs. You have 4 strikeouts, but only 3 outs. That's, you know, and it's the same thing. And it's the same thing is you have to catch the ball. I think that's the priority in baseball is catching throws, catching your teammates.
I wonder why.
Well, it's a scoring thing. You know, it's like.
I wonder why catching is so important. You know,
beats me. I can't catch, so I really wouldn't know.
You learn something new every day. So I didn't know that they scored like this. And Jim said, well, you know, don't you look at the score sheets? And Jim is the one who gets all these score boxes from every single game and logs them in the computers and stuff. I just watch baseball. So if I don't see it and I don't hear about it on Pro Yaku News, it didn't happen. So I never heard of it before, but it was a good one to go back. If you can look it up on it is on YouTube. So you can look it up there. And the four out inning, first time in 10 years in NPB that happened.
The other one you'll want to see is the 2 hidden ball tricks in Sunday's Rakuten Lotte game.
Yeah, I didn't. I missed those as well.
Oh, you missed them. The disappearing balls tricks. The ball that lodged in the outfield fence.
Missed it. I didn't get to see every play. Yeah, I got work.
They had a drive that stuck in the between the top of the rubber padding on the left field wall and the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And Hiroaki Shimauchi, the Eagles left fielder, was like, you know, he was going to play the ball off the wall when he couldn't get it. And he's looking around on the on the grass for the ball, and it's stuck in the wall. And the umpires, I believe, sent the runner back to third because of a ground rule. You know, the one that I think it's the same, the ground rule next to what happens if if the ball catches in a passing marsupial's pocket or something. the other one was a ball on the same game. A ball got stuck in the catcher's gear and couldn't
be. Oh yeah, I've seen that happen.
Dislodged. Yeah. So these two, the sort of hidden in plain sight ball tricks happened in one game. So that was kind of interesting.
All righty then. Let's go to fielding questions.
Hashtag high heat.
All right, so this is from Pete in the Kansai area via Messenger, and he sent this in quite a while back, but he didn't hear the episode to which he's referring right away. So right back at you, Pete. We're getting to your Fujinami comment a little bit late, but we're getting to it. So he says, hey, how's it going? Just finished the podcast and thought I'd give you my Fujinami take. He finished strong last year and had a great spring. Did he deserve opening day? Nope. It probably even hurt his comeback. Should we throw him at the back of the rotation and see what happens? Definitely. He might turn out to be a bullpen guy or might just keep being Fujinami. I always hear people saying trade him, but unless you can get a guy with the same potential, I'd just adjust his salary and forget about him being the ace. So I had thought about this early on, and I thought, why did the Tigers as an organization decide to throw Fujinami out there on opening night and knowing that he's going to be going up probably against number ones and number twos and possibly number threes all season long if he stays in that slot, which is impossible because people are going to be moving around anyway. And then the all-star break and then the Olympic break. for a while, he's going to be going up against the top pitchers in the Central League. So why did the Tigers do this? And I thought maybe it could have been some of that royal jelly type treatment where you tell a guy he's good, you put him in good situations, you show him that you believe in him, and you hope that he starts to believe it too. And that transfers into confidence and he sees some good results and he starts to grow and blah, blah, blah. And he becomes an ace. But I thought, no, because if they were going to do that, they had plenty of time to do that before. So was it that they really expected him to perform? Was no one else ready? Were they trying to hold that spot for somebody else? And maybe after probably around this time during Golden Week, when rotations start to shuffle and move and there's a lot of movement there's a lot of days off and you're playing. In fact, all the days this week, I think we have a bunch of day games in the Central League. Got back to backs. You got weird days off. Anyway, you know, he has shown some sharpness in his efforts this season. He had on April 16th, he beat Yao Colt and he walked only three. I think he hit two guys, but he was steady enough over 5 2/3 innings to get the win. And it was his first win at Koshim. And what did they say? 1,450 days, somewhere about that.
That was 1,450 years, but I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah, somewhere around 450 days. So I don't know. I think if you're in the batter's box and you're facing Fujinami, you don't know if the ball is going to go over your head, at your butt, or over the strike zone. He's just going to walk a bunch of guys. I think the Hanshin Tigers just don't worry about the fact that he's going to be wild and he's going to walk guys. They just want him to get through five innings. If they can get him through five innings once a week, that's what they're going to live with. I don't think they're treating him like he's going to be the ace. I think they're just trying to get some usage out of him because this has been, what are we going on now? I mean, he's the successful handkerchief prince, basically. He hasn't been great, but he hasn't been someone you can just dump. So they've had to live with him. And I just think they're trying to figure out the best way to get through five innings each week with Shintaro Fujinami, the F word, as our buddy Trevor likes to say. And then they'll worry about the rest of the rotation, but he is what he is. Jim.
Well, yeah, we see a bunch of variations of Fujinami. We've seen Fujinami 1, which was the Phenom. Fujinami version 0.1, which was the Phenom. And then Fujinami version 0.2, which was the disaster. And then Fujinami 0.3, which is the reclamation project. So right now we're Fujinami 0.3. We've seen a little bit of, you know, the one and two mixed in there a little bit, but we're still in the three. I think I think Akihiro Yano, manager Akihiro Yano of the Tigers, is just doing his level best to find anything that will allow this guy to just go and pitch, you know, and find the best, you know, the best combination of accuracy and movement that'll work for him for the most number of innings in a game. He's trying to find that sweet spot. And I think you said, I'm sort of paraphrasing what you said. He's trying to find that part where he'll be the most useful,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, it might end up being in relief. It might not be, but right now it's as a starter. So I think he's doing his sort of Tatsunori Hara impression is, you know, you're a guy who hasn't really earned this, but I'm going to give you a shot to just, you know, and I'm going to try to actually take the pressure off as much as possible, but encourage you and show that we think you're, you know, give him a bunch of confidence boosting by, you know, like he did with, I think, Teruaki Sato today. You know, I'm going to put you in the cleanup hitter, which is not a big thing to Yano, or at least he lets on that it's not a big thing, even though the Japanese media pretty much, I think, wanted to be angry with Yano for anointing a cleanup hitter without calling a press conference first. So, you know, it's a big event, and Yano is just the guy to sort of, like, I think I like his makeup as a manager because he takes things that should be really big, you know, which should be torturous and sort of like, you know, everybody wants to make a big deal out of it. And he thinks it's really big and he knows it's really big for the individual, but he wants to take all that stuff and get rid of it and throw out all that extraneous pressure and get rid of it. Instead, let the guy play baseball. And then afterwards, when he succeeds, you know, said, you know, you stepped into a really stressful situation and you did really well, you know, good on you. And if he fails, it'd be like, it's no big deal. You know, he's setting his players up to succeed. And I really like his approach. So I think what he's done with Fujinami has been kind of that same treatment. You know, I'm going to throw you into a situation that everybody else thinks is crazy, but I think you can handle it. I think you'll do well. Be yourself, go out and do your best job, and, you know, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and I like what Pete said about trading for a guy with the same potential, because I don't even know that we know what the potential is anymore, because we have seen he cannot control his pitches consistently. So
well,
what do we want? We want somebody, you know, who can throw hard, who walks a bunch of guys and doesn't give up that many hits. And what's the best we can expect from that guy? We want to trade Fujinami for somebody like that. That guy doesn't exist.
Yeah, and you kind of, with a pitcher like Fujinami, typically as pitchers get older, they tend to develop better command as their velocity decreases. But so many things about Fujinami are an anomaly.
Yeah, I would personally not really trust him to throw the ball over the plate all the time, because I don't think he knows. I think he knows where about 9 out of 10 of his pitches are going.
Okay.
And that's about it.
Okay.
And so that every 10th pitch,
he's,
you know,
a hard
one. Duck.
And he's a hard one because he's not only, you know, not only was he a marquee amateur who's got that little cachet, but he also was really successful his first 3 seasons. So he's got that history of being successful. And you're always going to have that. I mean, we've seen guys, there are lots of teams. I would bet there are teams who aren't the Hanshin Tigers who have a plan for Fujinami if they can get their hooks on them.
Plan, but yeah, I don't know. All right, well, we appreciate the comment, Pete.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Anyone else with a comment or a question, hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag #HighHeat. Send questions by email and MP3 questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a message there. Jim, I know for a fact that you have an event coming up on Monday.
I do have an event coming up, so that'll be going out the day this drops. We have Nippon Ham Fighters, former Nippon Ham Fighter Slugger, and current Nippon Ham Fighters professional scout Matt Winters will be joining J-Ball Allen live chat. 11 a.m. Japan time, 10 p.m. Sunday night Eastern Daylight Time. So if you are a member, you will get an invitation in your weekly newsletter. And if you're not a member, now's the time to join.
Okay, and we got games today. We got a lot of day games this week. Lots of baseball. So enjoy your baseball, and we'll talk to you next week.
And see you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.